This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, election results in Mozambique and a preview of the first Africa-Russia summit in Sochi, Russia. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Preliminary results from the October 15 election reveal that current President Philippe Nyusi of the ruling Frelimo Party has won approximately 72% of the votes against about 21% for the opposition Renamo candidate Osufu Momade. Third-party candidate David Simango garnered approximately 5.8% of the votes. International observers thus far say that the elections took place in a relatively peaceful and orderly manner. However, there was considerable violence in the weeks leading up to the elections. More than 40 people died and dozens were wounded in campaign incidents. In one episode, the Mozambican police killed an electoral observer and human rights monitor in the southern province of Gaza in the final days of campaigning. The vote is considered crucial because a recent constitutional amendment decentralized power so that provincial governors would now be elected directly rather than appointed by the central government. The vote also comes just 2 months after President Nyusi and the opposition Renamo Party signed a permanent ceasefire meant to stop the fighting that has flared sporadically in the 27 years since the end of a 15-year civil war that killed an estimated 1 million people and devastated the former Portuguese colony. Mozambique is struggling to recover from a pair of cyclones that struck the central and northern regions earlier this year and killed more than 600 people, while attacks by shadowy extremists in the north are also a source of growing concern. We'll take a look at what the preliminary results augur for the future of Mozambique, now home to one of the world's largest natural gas deposits. So with us to discuss it all are two distinguished analysts. Judd Devermont is director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and that's a Washington-based policy group, and Stephanie Burchard. She's a U.S. national security and defense expert at the Institute for Defense Analyses based in Virginia. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Judd Devermont, let me begin with you. We were here at these microphones a month or so ago talking about Mozambique, the violence in the north, the insurgencies, the newfound natural gas wealth. Let's talk about the elections. What is the readout you have so far? Were they relatively free and fair? Were you surprised at these preliminary results?
Yeah, I'm surprised at the results. This should have been a walk in the park for Frelimo. They could have easily won this election, but done it in a way that probably matches their true standing on the ground. And that's not what we saw, Carol. They got, as you said, 72%. It's their highest win since 2009. Arguably, it's one of their highest since the end of the Civil War. There was all sorts of shenanigans. They prevented lots of observers. You talked about the violence earlier. There was inflated registrations in key regions. And so the EU has already said this was not a level playing field. And as I look forward, I have real questions about what this means for Nyusi's legitimacy. He's got a full plate ahead of him on issues he's got to address, and he's starting his second term under a cloud of, I would argue, illegitimacy.
Well, turning to you, Stephanie Burchard, for your take on the results so far.
I tend to agree with Judd. I was pretty surprised by these preliminary results. My read was that this is going to be a very close election, that Nyusi would struggle to get above 50%, would most likely win the election, but that the true results would be closer to 50 to 60% of the vote. Frelimo is not as popular as it was in its heyday. I think the latest Afrobarometer poll from 2018 only had about 30% of citizens polled said they supported Frelimo. So this is a very big surprise to me. I think that it is reflective of a significant amount of ballot stuffing, of all sorts of irregularities and fraud that has taken place. We've heard rumors all over the country of inflated registration. Judd mentioned that. There are talks of 300,000 ghost voters in Gaza province that nobody can understand how they were able to register this many people. And in fact, I think the head of the National Statistics Organization had to resign or was fired because he said that he didn't think that this was a correct figure, that the census figure that he was responsible for was more accurate. So there's a lot of questions about the quality of this election. And I think that it's unlikely that this is a true reflection of what the populace wants. Having said that, I disagree with Judd in that I don't think this is going to cause illegitimacy for Nyusi because I don't know that anybody cares that much about this, unfortunately. I think that we're not going to see SADC or any regional folks mention this. They're not going to be protests. There's just not going to be as much concern as you would like to see for such a fraudulent result. And I think that's why the government thinks, rightfully so, that they could get away with this type of fraud.
Well, that's fascinating to hear. Turning back to you, Judd Devermont, do you agree with Stephanie that some of the major organizations like SADC, maybe Africa Union, they're not going to really care too much? How do you see the population as well? Are they rather apathetic? Are we going to see protests or grievances aired in the coming days?
Yeah, so I agree that I don't think we're going to see SADC or the AU say much. This is too important of a country to speak out. It's not the Comoros, where they actually did say something. But there was one important measure for this election. How many provinces did Renamo, the opposition, take? This was the key issue. It wasn't about the national vote. It was about these provinces, which was key to the peace agreement between Frelimo and Renamo. And we don't have all the results right now, but it is possible that Renamo gets zero provinces. So right now, they're looking like the ruling party Frelimo had a little over 50% in Nampula, which is Renamo leader Momade's home province. And we don't have the results yet on a second region, Zambezi. Frelimo looks like it is up. But if they do not get that, a couple of things. First of all, it will really tarnish the peace deal. It is not clear to me, and this is why I probably wouldn't go as far to say there won't be protests, that Renamo supporters in the central regions won't protest. More importantly, when you look over the stability of this country, there is a split in Renamo over the peace deal. There is Renamo, led by Momade, who succeeded Dhlakama in recent years, and then there's a splinter known as the military junta. And the military junta will pick up support for this election because Renamo could not deliver these provinces. And that's where I think the real problems are. And that's what I would point to, illegitimacy, or at least, you know, a cloud under how he came to power and real questions about the peace agreement.
So, Stephanie, your take on the impact of these elections on this peace deal between Renamo and Frelimo, the likelihood that it will stick or perhaps be somehow tarnished or undermined, as Judd suggested?
Well, I definitely think there's going to be a problem. And I misspoke when I said there wouldn't be protests. I don't think there's going to be an international outcry or protest. I do think there's some domestic issues. And I don't think that Momade and Renamo really expected to ever win the presidency. I do think they expect to get between 3 and 5 provincial governorships and provincial assembly majorities. And if that doesn't happen, that's when I see protests breaking out. That's when I see issues with mobilization and sort of a reneging of the peace agreement, because the peace agreement was supposed to lay sort of a foundation for a better decentralized sort of sharing of power. And if that doesn't happen, I think not only will the junta be active, but I think Momade and his supporters as well will probably mobilize for action.
I mean, Carol, when you have this kind of rigging in a second term where we may disagree on how much Frelimo should have won, but the expectations were they were going to win, this is about intra-party politics. And what we're going to have to try to pull out over the next couple of weeks is, was this Frelimo cadre saying we don't like the deal and we are going to scuttle it by a high turnout in the provinces? Is this Frelimo trying to show Nyusi that they're with them and they want to deliver a higher or at least a close to high result as his predecessor did? Or does Nyusi himself believe the only way that he could be credible is to have such a high turnout? And so whether this is an attempt to reject the deal or this is about consolidating control, I think it augurs some real challenges ahead for this party, because this was not about sharing the dividends with Renamo. This was about inter-party politics and who is going to be the top dog in Frelimo.
That's really rather unfortunate if that's really the case. So, Stephanie, back to what it means if Renamo didn't win or take any of the provinces. What relationship would that have to the governors? In other words, there's a direct vote for governors. Do we have a readout on that, or is that directly related to whoever wins the province?
Whoever wins the province, and this is the first time it's happening in Mozambique, whoever wins the province will get to choose from their party list the governor, and it'll be the top one or two candidates on their closed party list. Previously, the central government was responsible for appointing all governors. And so this was part of the agreement with Renamo to decentralize power, that the majority party that wins the provincial assembly would then get the governorship. What's pretty fascinating to me is within the past few months, though, the government of Mozambique announced that they were going to create these provincial secretaries of state positions. It's unclear what role they'll have in administering the provincial government. It's unclear what powers they will have, but it definitely seems like it's meant to undermine the authority given to the governor position.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Judd Devermont. He's director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Stephanie Burchard, U.S. National Security and Defense Expert at the Institute for Defense Analyses. We're discussing the preliminary results of the Mozambican elections and soon previewing the Russia-Africa summit in Sochi. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Now, here's a big shout out to a very loyal listener, Tariq Alpan Shentuna from Turkey. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. But we'll soon be talking about Russia. But Turkey has a big hand in Africa these days, doesn't it, Judd?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's talk more about the elections before we turn to Sochi conference, especially with respect to these governors, which were meant to decentralize power, perhaps allow other parties, Renamo in particular, take some control. But Stephanie brought up this phenomenon of Secretary of State positions. So really, would the governors in fact have power over the purse or real decision-making power anyway to govern at the local level?
Again, this is why this election result is so confounding. They knew that they had to give some governorships to Renamo to sort of cement the peace deal. They also had created a backdoor for the secretaries of state, so those provinces that were Renamo governed, that the federal government, the central government, could still have control. The secretary of state positions, if these are all Frelimo governorships, are sort of irrelevant at this point. They're just patronage, but they're not an ability to override or to navigate or circumvent Renamo governors, because at this point, we're not sure there are Renamo governors.
So, Stephanie, this seems to call into question Frelimo's sincerity or willingness to share power. So how do you see going forward, especially with Frelimo? I mean, do you see any real will to share power?
That I'm not sure about. I think the August 1st peace deal, the announcement and the signing of the accords, there was a lot of enthusiasm. New CMO Made hugged. It seemed like this was actually going to be a significant, you know, attempt at peace. And this is the third, I think, peace agreement that Renamo has come to with Frelimo since the end of the civil war. This election really calls into question if Frelimo's committed to a peace deal at all with Renamo. Since the death of Jilakama last year, I wonder if Frelimo thinks that it's hedging its bets, that Renamo isn't popular, that without the charismatic longtime leader, that they weren't going to be able to do anything. And there's a lot at stake financially with this election. As you mentioned, Mozambique is going to be one of the world's largest natural gas producers. There's significant other natural resources in Mozambique as well. So I feel like there's a lot financially at stake for folks. And maybe Frelimo really didn't want to share. And Judd mentioned and sort of alluded to some inter-party factions.
You mentioned other problems in the country, resources. And when we were at these microphones the last time, Judd, we talked about the insurgency in the north, particularly in Cabo Delgado. So I'd like to know the impact of these elections so far, what we know of the results on Cabo Delgado, the insurgency approximately a year ago, militants, supposedly Islamist militants attacked more than a dozen villages. But at the same time, that is the location of these natural gas deposits. So there's so much at stake there.
Yeah, well, first, our very large report on what's happening in Cabo Delgado will be out. It's scenarios written by my colleague Emily Colombo, and it really helps point out where this could go, depending on both the government response and the capacity of the insurgency. How this election will impact Cabo Delgado, I think, is twofold. First, Cabo Delgado residents didn't vote, or didn't vote in large numbers. And the AU representative, former Nigerian president Goodluck Jonathan, said that wasn't a problem. No issues here. So one, they weren't able to exercise their constitutional right to vote. Second, I think in the best case scenario, we all hoped that once Nyusi got the election behind him and consolidated control, that he could do what at least at times he seems to suggest, which is a willingness to negotiate, to have a more balanced, holistic approach, not to abandon the military approach. I wouldn't recommend that, but include development, negotiations, investments alongside much more surgical strikes that don't discriminately hit civilians. And now with the mess within the party, or what we think may be a mess, I'm not sure he's going to be able to consolidate control. And just to bring us up to speed, when we talked last, Carol, the insurgency had largely been fairly rudimentary in its attacks. It has largely still been on the coast. But last month, we saw a coordinated strike done by this group, which I think is the first sophisticated attack they've done since that October 2017 attack. Ever since then, they've been sort of much more basic. So we're still unpacking what that meant. But on the government side, to preview our later conversation, the Russians have showed up. So the Russians are in Cabo Delgado. They have denied they have personnel. I think most observers believe they have personnel there. They certainly have admitted to delivering equipment to the Mozambican military. And if I wanted to have an effective counterinsurgency strategy, the last place I would go is the Russians. So I don't think it's a very good sign for getting out of this problem with the least amount of casualties.
Stephanie, I'd like to get your comments on the situation in Cabo Delgado, where it's very resource-rich now with the natural gas. We have the insurgency. There's terrorists, but some of the violence emanates from the feeling of being marginalized by the central government in terms of what they may or may not benefit from these resources that will be coming online. How do you see this unfolding?
I'm pretty concerned about it. So I'd like to point out a couple things with the way that the situation in Cabo Delgado impacted the election. One, we know a minimum of 5,000 people were not allowed to register, but the estimates are closer to probably 20 to 60,000 people who should have been able to vote have not been able to vote in Cabo Delgado. So that's definitely a problem. On the campaign trail, I was hoping to hear more from the opposition about the insecurity in Cabo Delgado, and I don't think that they capitalized very much on that as a sign that the government is not exerting enough strength and can't manage domestic issues. But I think it was about a month ago on the campaign trail in Cabo Delgado, Nyusi said he was willing for the first time to negotiate with the insurgents if they would be willing to reveal themselves, which they so far have not done. The group that's operating in Cabo Delgado, we don't know very much about it, partially due to a media blackout, but partially because the group has not made any statements about what they want. They have not identified themselves. And so that was the first time that Nyusi seemed to indicate that he was willing to negotiate with the group, which I think could be a very valuable step. But given how this election is unfolding and what the government seems to be willing to do to secure power, I don't know what the future is going to hold. And talking about Russian involvement is a big concern. I talked to a colleague, Maputo, and he said the rumors were that there were Russian drones operating, flying out of Cabo Delgado, and that they had been responsible for a large-scale attack on the insurgent group. And he had no idea the number of casualties, but he had heard the Russians were, you know, attacking the insurgents alongside the Mozambican military.
Well, let's conclude by talking about this upcoming Russia-Africa conference in Sochi as we talk about their presence right now on the ground and what that means for Africa's progress in democracy, its autonomy. I mean, we know Russia is a very bad actor on the world stage. So what is your take on the purpose and the implications? Who's attending, for example, Judd, this conference in Sochi?
So the conference in Sochi is theater. Russia wants to portray themselves as back in Africa. And they want to show, through this conference. They've invited all 50 leaders. Last count, about 35 have RSVP'd. That they want to show that Africans subscribe to their vision of a multipolar world. And there will be some agreements signed. Nigeria is probably going to pick up another military security deal. President Putin's going to oversee President El-Sisi and Prime Minister Abe talking about the dam. I don't expect much resolution there. And they'll roll out the red carpet. But I think this is not what we should be focusing on. What Russia is doing in parts of Africa is deeply destabilizing. They've signed military deals with 27 different countries at this point. They have set up military advisors in places and sent soldiers in places like CAR and in Mozambique.
Central African Republic.
And they are sponsoring disinformation campaigns trying to protect al-Bashir, Sudanese al-Bashir, yes. So very destabilizing. What we have to do is not worry about the show in Sochi and focus on the threats.
Exactly. Stephanie, very disturbing from many points of view. How concerned are you about this renewed Russian attempt to spread its tentacles in the continent? Of course they were there during the Soviet Union days, mm-hmm. and one could argue that the autocracy and repressive society and government today that it was in those days, it's an autocratic, repressive system, and certainly with respect to the media. I know there's going to be a media session at this Sochi conference. I mean, that's the last thing we want to do is spread their form of closed media, spread of disinformation, which they're expert at, and which is really all they do.
Sure. If you're a fan of democracy, you should be very worried about what's happening right now. A lot of democracies in Africa are fragile. They've been growing, maturing since the 1990s, but there's still a lot that needs to be done to consolidate these democracies. And so by supporting rebel groups, by helping governments like in Mozambique take a heavy-handed approach to insurgency, by, you know, propping up governments that may not have popular support, it's definitely a problem for democratic growth and consolidation in Africa.
So, Judd Evermont, how concerned are you about this spread of Russian influence? And do you think that some of the African countries, particularly like Mozambique, for example, and others that are trying to ward off challenges to their authority or insurgencies might turn to Russia in the absence of perhaps greater efforts by the United States? And then, of course, there's always China, which is also a disturbing factor.
I think you're absolutely right, Carol. You put your finger on it. There's a couple of reasons why Russia is coming back to Africa. First, after the sanctions in 2014, they need a more permissive environment for their companies. And so the economic interest there is real. Second, as we talked about earlier, they want to create a system of allies and partners that can help them with their global messaging. And then three, this is an opportunity to score points at the U.S. and the West, to go where the U.S. seems to be no longer present. And that's how they've positioned lots of their assistance, whether it's in Sahel or in Mozambique or name a country. They are positioning themselves as stepping up where the United States is stepping back. The challenge, I think, with talking about Russia is that we have to disaggregate what is the hype and then what is the real threat. Because there are real threats, but sometimes it's overblown. And one of the things that I counsel people is what we should be doing collectively is not trying to elevate Russia in Africa, but trying to isolate them. When we talk about great power competition in Africa, and we include Russia as one of those actors, well, we're doing Putin's bidding. There's the U.S., and there's China, and there's Europe, and there's very far down the line, after Turkey, after the Gulf, is Russia. They are a bit player in sub-Saharan Africa. And so we have to focus on what they're doing that's negative and try to not overplay it or oversell it. What's interesting is, unlike China, unlike the U.S., the Russians aren't playing a very sophisticated game. They're going all in on autocrats. That's great until an autocrat gets removed. When these governments change over, and we're seeing tremendous turnover in African countries, 27 African heads of state have turned over since 2015. If Russia makes the wrong bet, they're out. We don't make wrong bets because we don't make bets. And truthfully, China doesn't make bets anymore. We're investing across countries, developing relationships with civil society, presidents, incumbents, opposition, and the Russians are only going for incumbents, which is a strategic vulnerability.
To be continued. But for now, that's all the time we have. on this edition of the program. I'd like to thank my guests, Judd Devermont, Director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Stephanie Burchard, U.S. National Security and Defense Expert at the Institute for Defense Analyses. Thanks so much to both of you for your wonderful insights.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Vasco Volorich. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.